climate change is a deadly serious topic. Deadly serious, potentially deadly for our species. That's you and me, sisters and brothers, for our children, potentially for our homeland, for the planet. You'd think that sounding the alarm, giving more information, would mobilize people, would activate people. Or would you? Is giving information, is hitting that toxin so that people are aware of the problems, is that sufficient? Does that accomplish mobilizing people? Longtime activists know that getting people to act is much more complicated than getting the information out there. In fact, indications are around climate change that the more information we put out, the less people are likely to act. Is it a question of the kind of information? Well, what then does it take? What then would it take to enable people to mobilize around the issue of climate change? If it's not a lack of awareness, and there is widespread awareness, why the inactivity? This morning we'll have a two-part discussion addressing precisely that issue. We'll speak first with a sociologist, then with a psychologist. The two of them have a lot in common beyond the happy coincidence of Norwegian roots. Both of them are more than scholars. They're profound scholars thinking deeply around these issues, but they take their scholarship, they take their theorizing out into the community. They're activists as well. Kari Marie Norgaard. Kari, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Kari is the author of Living in Denial, Climate Change, Emotions, and Everyday Life. She's a professor at University of Oregon, both in sociology and environmental studies. She's with us this morning, not only to talk about climate change, but because that fascinating book that I just mentioned raises larger political questions. And she's carried her concern around inactivity, people knowing something but not acting, even though they know it's important, to other areas as well, to human rights violations, for instance. That is, people aware of human rights violations on the part of their government, but choosing, I don't know if choosing is the right word, but looking the other way, not fully taking it in, not fully acting. Kari, knowing the need, let's stick with climate change for the moment, knowing the need to take action, why aren't many more people active?
Thank you, Norman. Thanks for that really generous introduction and for the work that all of you are doing on this show. So that's a really big question on the lips of many people in the scientific community for a long time, which is how I got interested in doing the work I did. But also, obviously, all of us who are watching what's happening around climate change and looking around and saying, what's going on? Here's this really big problem. It's, you know, barely made it now in the last couple cycles as a presidential election, but for a long time, you know, was very low on the public lists of priorities and things like that. And I think, you know, essentially my work has come, which is rooted in psychology and social psychology in particular, is coming at this, again, as you said, you know, information is important, but information alone is not enough. And the dominant view or sort of, and still from a lot of the scientific community is, you know, we need to do better science communication, or people get very discouraged and they say, oh, you know, people just don't care. And my work is really trying to change, widen the response to that question, that either people don't know or they don't care. And on the don't know side, exactly right. You can't just give people information. And it's great that you mentioned the organizing dimension of this, because organizers have known this for a long time. But we have to have a sense that there's something worthwhile and meaningful that we can actually do in order to be involved. We also have to have a sense that there's other people, you know, and in this case, because it's such a large, complex problem, we're aware that doing something on our own is not adequate. So especially if you look at, you know, the lack of social movement response and things like that, it can be kind of circular. We know we need to have a lot of people involved. If we look around and see there aren't very many, then why bother? And especially, too, we have a context where we're told, you know, respond to climate change by, you know, doing smaller individual actions, which are important but are not going to stop climate change, you know, like using more energy efficiency or not using automobiles. These things matter, but we, at this point, have to be talking about much larger political scale change, changes in our fuel sources, getting off of coal, thinking at the state and national level about policies, not at the individual level. So in the absence of that larger discourse, people are likely not to be involved either. I can say more, but I'll let you.
Yeah. Well, implicit in what you're saying, of course, is the need to extend that discourse to have much more conversation about the issues. If we're going to make
exactly.
an argument,
I think we need to have, you know, the last two conversations were very interesting and related to, you know, to this kind of thing, because on the one hand, there's a lot of discouragement, and I think there's a lot of discouragement, particularly in the middle class, and that can be a very cyclical thing, because, you know, if there's anything that will keep the power structure in place, it's if those of us who do still have some political power don't use it. Right? By contrast, if we look at what happened at Standing Rock, we look at indigenous communities, we look at working class communities, people who are really on the edge, and the kind of, it's not been a calculation of, am I going to personally benefit from this or not, but we need to take action now. And so I'm very interested also in the way that denial, which I study as a social phenomena, that denial is also related to privilege, that it's particularly prevalent amongst, you know, people who have more a sense of comfort in their immediate lives.
Now, a major thrust of the book that you've written is exploring the specific ways that people find to justify or to not even be aware of their own inaction, and the ways that these justifications or lack of awarenesses are socially encouraged.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, denial is often thought of as a more individual or psychological phenomena, and it's there's important work that's been done at that level. But I, as a sociologist, think about how we do it collectively. So it matters that I, for example, and all of us listening presumably, live in the United States, which is a country that enormously benefits from oil extraction at the same time as we also pay major costs. But it's very different, for example, than people who are in a, you know, South Pacific island nation that does not benefit and is very directly impacted. The way that their psychology with respect to climate change looks very different. So denial is also social, not only in the reason that we might feel it, but especially how we do it. So as a community, there's things that are normal to talk about and uncomfortable. There are conversation norms, norms of emotion. How afraid, how much fear is it socially acceptable to show publicly before people think you're crazy? You know, these things are social norms that shape then the kinds of reality that we ultimately produce by what we do and don't talk about and share and so forth.
Well, I'm going to encourage our listeners to take a look at the book for a much more detailed and fascinating, again, discussion of the obstacles to activism around the issue of climate change, how that denial actually manifests itself, the different forms that it takes. But I want to move now a little bit to your conclusions as well. One of them, very, very important, of course, is that inaction or apathy, as you explore it, is not simply a natural default.
Absolutely. So I think it's something that when you are aware of a real problem, it's the idea of the elephant in the room being very difficult to ignore, right? If you're aware that something's there, it actually takes work to ignore it. You have to do mental work, change the subject in conversations, turn off the radio when it's playing something you don't want to listen to. These are actual actions. And, you know, so this is, you know, this is also why I talk about it as a socially constructed thing. And underneath that, one of the things that's critical, I mentioned that part of the conversation that I hope to change with the book is that people just need more information. And the other part is that they just need to care more. the reason that people are working to ignore this problem is not because they are greedy and self-interested and don't care, but actually I believe because we do have a really profound capacity to care. And climate change is the largest material and symbolic threat, certainly that we've had in a very long time, if not ever, in the history of humanity. And that makes it a very difficult thing to confront.
Kari, we're going to have to end this segment of our conversation. I want to mention two things. One is that, of course, you point out in the book that the ongoing conversations that we need are best carried on. They're rewarded, they're reinforced by participating in social movements. This isn't an individual phenomenon and can't be overcome individually. And I wanted to mention also that your own activity, I guess we won't have time to explore it now, but your work with the Karuk, with Klamath Native Americans around some of these same issues.
Absolutely. Right now, if anyone's interested in the current issue of Yes Magazine, the guys I work with that are doing a lot to bring fire back to the landscape as a preventative measure, it is incredibly heartening to me to work with people who are coming at things with such vision and being proactive and not just wringing their hands and giving up, but it's a real model for how local communities, there's many things that can be done, and the benefits that all of us bring are receive both individually and collectively from really engaging with the climate.
Wonderful. We've been talking with Kari Marie Norgaard. Kari, it's been a pleasure, our contact both before the show and during the program. We'll talk again.
Thank you. Thank you for your work. And everyone, get out in the streets and do things together for the world. It's worth it.